Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, August 14th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Republican Jeff Johnson says he wants a positive campaign for governor. Jim Hagedorn is the GOP candidate for Congress in the 1st District, and St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman wants to fix the city's streets. Republican gubernatorial candidate Jeff Johnson is promising to use several ideas from his primary opponents as he campaigns against DFL Governor Mark Dayton. After winning the GOP nomination Tuesday, Johnson appeared yesterday with the candidates he defeated, Scott Honor, Marty Seifert, and Kurt Zellers, in a show of party unity. Tim Pugmire reports.
Johnson said he believes the hard-fought primary contest against three formidable opponents made him a stronger candidate for the general election. He said Honor taught him the need for bold action, Seifert taught him the importance of rural Minnesota, and Zeller showed him that not giving an inch on taxes or spending is a good idea.
I think that is actually one of the two things we have to have as a party if we want to beat Mark Dayton. We have to be united as a Republican Party. We have been divided at times in the past, in years past, and it's really hurt us, and we can't do that this year.
In addition to unity, Johnson said the Republican ticket needs a vision that will attract independent voters in November. He said his vision includes lower taxes, less government spending, public school reforms, reduced government involvement in health care, and a belief that the poor can move up without a redistribution of wealth.
That's a vision, I think, that people in Minnesota who maybe aren't political, certainly who don't consider themselves Republicans, need to hear.
Johnson thanked his primary rivals for waging a generally positive campaign that didn't get personal. And he said he wants to see the same tone in the weeks ahead with Dayton. But Johnson predicted that DFL groups will take frequent aim at him and his record.
They're going to hammer me on everything under the sun. They're going to turn me into the guy who, you know, wants to drown kittens in the river for fun. And whether it's women's issues or whatever. And, boy, I think Minnesotans are just tired of that. I'm not going to engage in that.
Still, Johnson did some hammering of his own on Dayton and DFL lawmakers for their support of the Senate office building under construction near the state capitol. He called it a phenomenal waste of taxpayer dollars. Johnson also criticized the new minimum wage increase Democrats backed as bad policy. At a later news conference, DFL party chair Ken Martin took aim at Johnson, calling the GOP nominee a Tea Party extremist who wants to turn back the clock.
Jeff Johnson wants to continue the disastrous policy of cutting taxes for the wealthy, while at the same time cutting government services that will help our middle class thrive in this state. That is the wrong policy for Minnesota, and we don't need to go backwards as Jeff Johnson would take us.
Governor Dayton did not appear with the DFL party leader. He was in Mankato for an event marking the expansion of that city's civic center. Dayton told reporters there that he looks forward to a good discussion of the issues with Johnson in the coming weeks.
I'm focused right now on being governor of Minnesota. I have 5 months left in my term, one way or the other, so that's my focus for now, and after the state fair, after the Labor Day, that's traditionally the beginning of the contest, and then we'll have a chance to have some debates and present our views of what where Minnesota should go for the future.
Dayton said he shares Johnson's desire for a positive campaign, but he added that it is totally valid to point out their policy differences. Dayton started by questioning Johnson's willingness to scrap future minimum wage increases. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Incumbent State Auditor Rebecca Otto's decisive primary victory Tuesday didn't end the DFL party's harsh criticism of her challenger, Matt Entenza. DFL Chair Ken Martin accused Entenza of trying to buy the election and waging an overly negative campaign. Entenza is a former state legislator and a 2010 candidate for governor. He angered party leaders by taking on their endorsed candidate. Martin told reporters yesterday that Entenza was done in by his blind ambition.
The minute he filed against an incumbent DFLer who's wildly popular in our party, again, it confirmed for everyone there were suspicions about this guy, that his own ambition, this is what it's always been about. It's always been about Matt. And so I think he's burned all of those bridges for the last time, unfortunately.
Entenza issued a statement Tuesday night conceding to Otto and endorsing her campaign. He blamed his loss on low voter turnout. Republican Senate candidate Mike McFadden did an about-face on the gas tax yesterday. He was responding to a question from a reporter for the St. Cloud Times. First, McFadden said he would consider supporting an increase in the federal fuel tax to resolve a shortfall in the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Moments later, he reversed course, saying he doesn't support increasing the fuel tax. McFadden later told the St. Cloud Times he misspoke in his initial remarks. Republicans in southern Minnesota rejected their party's endorsed candidate in favor of businessman Jim Hagedorn in Tuesday's primary. Hagedorn is promising an aggressive campaign against 1st District Congressman Tim Walz, and Hagedorn thinks his anti-Washington message will resonate with voters. Mark Zedeklik reports.
Jim Hagedorn lives in the southern Minnesota town of Blue Earth. One thing that may have helped him defeat the endorsed Republican candidate Aaron Miller is his name. Hagedorn's father, Tom, represented southern Minnesota in Congress from the mid-1970s to the early 1980s. Jim Hagedorn worked for former Minnesota Congressman Arlen Stangland and held positions with the Federal Treasury Department before returning to Minnesota in 2009. Hagedorn is banking on a strong showing for Republicans this fall, and he's convinced his anti-Obama, anti-big government, anti-regulation message is attractive to southern Minnesota voters.
We speak with people all the time that said, I used to support Congressman Walz and even overlook his liberal voting record because I thought he was good, for instance, for veterans. But now they're disappointed with the scandals in Washington. They're disappointed with the people in Washington who have responsibility that they're not even handling those types of issues. So I think we have an opportunity in this election to appeal to a great range of voters.
Hagedorn sought the GOP endorsement for Congress in the 1st District in 2010, but failed to win it. His path to the 2014 general election ballot for the Republican slot against Walz was unconventional. He ran for the party endorsement, lost it, dropped out of the race, and then changed his mind and got back in to handily defeat Miller in the primary. Hagedorn says he won by mounting what he calls an insurgency campaign, and he says it's the approach Republicans need to take to defeat Walz.
A lot of that is aggressively taking him on in the issues, getting in the newspapers and so forth, letting people know where you stand. And also, I think, shoe leather, getting across the district, spending your time. The one advantage a challenger has is a lot of time. The congressman's in Washington doing other things.
Hagedorn is struggling with fundraising. He had just $9,000 in campaign cash as of the latest federal election reporting deadline on July 23rd. Walz had more than $500,000. But Hagedorn says major donors will emerge if he can demonstrate he can mount a viable campaign against Walz. Walz declined an interview request for this story and deferred to DFL party chair Ken Martin. Martin says Hagedorn's political philosophy runs far right of most voters in southern Minnesota.
He's decided to cozy up with Tea Party extremists. These are the same extremists who shut down federal government, have been the main people that were responsible for the delay in getting a farm bill done.
2 years ago, Walz won re-election by more than 15 percentage points. But in 2010, the last non-presidential election year, his margin of victory was much slimmer, just a little more than 5 percentage points. Martin says he's concerned about turnout, but confident Walz will retain his seat in the House.
Tim Walz has done such a remarkable job for the people of the 1st Congressional District that even with the dip in turnout, I think he'll be fine. Again, we're not taking anything for granted. If we do our jobs and get the message out there, we should be able to prevail on November 4th.
Hagedorn says despite his decision to challenge the endorsed candidate, GOP Party Chairman Keith Downey has congratulated him and assured him that the state party will work to help him win the election. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Secretary of State's office estimates that only 9.8% of eligible voters cast ballots in Tuesday's primary election. The Secretary of State's initial projection before Tuesday's primary was for turnout of 10 to 15%. Nearly 3.9 million Minnesotans are eligible to vote. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman is proposing a modest increase in the city's tax levy and a major change in road repair policy. In his 2015 budget address yesterday, Coleman proposed boosting funding to rebuild the city's main thoroughfares while sharply reducing spending on the city's smaller residential streets. The move follows an outcry from residents and the city council over the condition of the city's major streets. Curtis Gilbert reports.
Coleman and the city council have gotten an earful about potholes this year. The winter was long and cold. The spring was long and wet. But Coleman says the root of the problem isn't the weather. It's the cruel passage of time.
The simple fact is that what we saw this last year, here and across the state of Minnesota, was the result of deteriorating conditions of our streets, many of which are more than 50 years old.
When the streets get that old, simply repaving them doesn't work. They need to be dug up and completely rebuilt. For decades, St. Paul has been doing that with its smaller residential streets, but it hasn't had a similar program for the main thoroughfares. Instead, the city relied on state funding that fell short of the need. Coleman's proposed budget would change that policy. It cuts $8 million from the residential street program, almost two-thirds of the current funding. At the same time, Coleman wants to pour $10 million into the arterial streets. That's more than triple what they get now. Coleman says the shift needs to happen, but he acknowledges there are downsides.
People value their residential streets. Obviously, it impacts their property values and the quality of their life in their neighborhoods. And so, you know, it's an important part of the program, but you can't go for as long as we've gone without kind of the massive infusion of resources to rebuild our arterials.
The shift would mean delaying construction projects scheduled in the coming years for many residential streets, including potentially the one where City Council member Chris Tolbert lives. But Tolbert says he's willing to make that trade-off.
I use a street like Hamlin, as do all the people on the residential streets, more often than I use my residential street, probably. So I think prioritizing those is the most important part.
Data from the U.S. Department of Transportation show Tolbert's road use is typical. Local residential streets get just 13% of U.S. traffic. More than half of the vehicle travel in the country happens on larger arterial and so-called collector streets. In addition to the shift from residential funding, Coleman wants to borrow $30 million to jumpstart other street and bike lane projects, and he pledged $3 million to help Ramsey County rebuild some of its roads in St. Paul. Coleman's plan got good reviews from several city council members who'd previously criticized his approach to road problems. In addition to the roads plan, Coleman also proposed giving city workers paid parental leave benefits with a price tag of $200,000. He also wants to hire three additional fire code inspectors to deal with a growing backlog. The city has a total of 9,000 rental properties overdue for inspection. Ricardo Cervantes directs the Department of Safety and Inspections. He says the backlog started when the city mandated the inspection of smaller rental properties.
2007, the city passed an ordinance to begin looking at single-family and duplex properties. The mayor said it here is that although that was a laudable effort, it was never properly funded and didn't have enough staff. So we're moving in that direction now.
To help pay for the inspections, Coleman proposed increasing fees charged to property owners. The budget proposal also includes spending cuts. While the number of police officers will stay the same, the department will lose civilian staff in its records unit and at its impound lot. Coleman says each city department was asked to find ways to save money.
This, I remind you, is on the heels of 8 straight years of difficult budgeting. There is simply little to no fat left on the bones of our budget. Further cuts could result in significant and unacceptable diminishment of critical services.
That's why Coleman is also proposing an increase to the city's property tax levy of 2.4% to bring in an additional $2.5 million. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.